Hey folks, Rob Wolf here, Greg Everett. It's episode 109. How has it been allowed to go on this long?
I don't know. It's not my fault.
I figured some bioethics committee would have intervened by now. Somebody with a better sense than us would have shut this thing down.
Well, there's a lot of competition for shutdown on the internet, so we're probably low on the list.
True enough. So what's new?
Got a 6 a.m. flight to Mobile, Alabama tomorrow morning for the American Open.
I see your 6 a.m. flight, and I raise you a 5:40 a.m. flight to somewhere in Virginia.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Won this time, Rob Wolf.
I've won even more adrenal fatigue and metabolic derangement.
Yes. Woo-hoo! Sweet. What's going on in Virginia?
A military gig. Oh, I'm the nutrition guy for a military gig.
Cool. That sounds secretive and exciting.
It's oblique. I have to be a little oblique about it, but yeah. Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, let's see if we can actually get these questions done, since the last couple ones we've not been able to finish everything on our plate.
We have been a little bit long-winded.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, here we go. CrossFit workouts, the early years. Gabby says, "Hi, Rob. Every once in a while, I hear you refer to the CrossFit workouts of early years being more in tune with what you prefer to the current incarnations. Could you elaborate on what those general types of exercises are or resources to look for to find them out, as I am someone not too fit with CrossFit? Currently, my general exercise routines are basic push, pull, squat circuits in the gym 3 times a week, 20 to 30 minutes, followed by 20 minutes of cardio, sometimes intervals, and I try to mix up the exercises in the circuits as much as possible. Are those early days of CrossFit similar, or is it something totally different? Thanks."
Well, you know, kind of like an archaeological dig, you can go to CrossFit.com and basically go to the early days, you know, early 2002, when the site, the current incarnation of the site first went up, and you can see the layout of the workouts and the link, you know, the links that they were putting up at that time.
Like the one to the performance menu?
Like the one or two
Rob Wolf's powerful menu. Contribution to the CrossFit community.
Which we were told was going to run in the left-hand banner thing next to like CrossFit Kids, but that never happened.
Weird.
And so you can see the workouts. Interestingly, again, as kind of an aside, most of the comments, I don't know if people have dug back into the old stuff, but the comments have been redacted. They've been expunged or modified because of shall we say controversial content. This came on the heels of the Reebok deal. So where once there was some pretty interesting and entertaining material in there, now the comments are just kind of empty when you go back past a certain date. But don't despair. After the black box thing went down, we had the whole website basically scanned, archived, and saved for posterity. So if we ever need to dig back in there and find anything interesting, then we've got that. But that's kind of neither here nor there for the programming. You know, the programming early on, you would see a day would pop up with practice handstands for 20 or 25 minutes. You would see couplets and triplets, occasionally a chipper type thing. Volume and intensity was just, I think, a little bit more rational. And I think it was James Fitzgerald, I think he said somewhere in September or October of 2008, he said, I noticed a dramatic change in the programming, and he ceased to make progress off of the CrossFit.com front page programming. And that's when Greg and Lauren handed off programming, I believe, to Tony Budding. And so you see a dramatic change. And there was kind of a ramping up over time anyway. Like the instead of, you know, for me, like the way that we've done things, the way that Greg's done things at Catalyst, the way that Michael Rutherford does stuff, the way that John Wellborn does stuff with CrossFit football, instead of, you know, getting in some mobility work, some strength work, some higher end technique work, and then some sort of conditioning stuff, even for kind of a generalist just wanting to be in shape crowd, instead of heading down that road, then the workouts just became bigger and longer more grueling, and that's been kind of the big change. So, I mean, early on, it was just much more reasonable volume and intensity, although even with that, I'll have to throw in the caveat. It was years that I was involved with CrossFit before I did something like an Angie workout, you know, 100 pull-ups, 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, 100 squats. Even with early back in my time when I was coming out of like the kettlebell, Pavel Tsatsulini kind of camp, you know, instead of doing 100 pull-ups, I would do ladders of pull-ups and dips, you know, so like 1-1, 3-3, 5-5, repeat for 20 minutes kind of gig, which usually would end up giving me a volume of you know, and I would load it so it was heavier, still metabolic, but definitely more on the strength side of this spectrum. And it really wasn't until I started trying to hang doing the diagnostic workouts that I absolutely crushed myself. That's really been the change over time. You saw more couplets and triplets, shorter workouts, occasional focus days that included some significant gymnastics type stuff. And over the course of time, the gymnastics disappeared because people were complaining about it. And you just saw longer, more kind of grueling workouts.
Yeah, there's definitely been a huge shift in with regard to skill development and or demonstration. And things have just kind of gotten more and more simplified. And, you know, instead of having multiple elements in a workout, you just have one big workout with all these different things thrown in pretty much haphazardly and randomly and usually in completely ill-advised manners. And I said this in a previous podcast, and it's like the evolution of CrossFit to me has been disappointing more than anything. There was just so much potential there in those early workouts, and it just all went to hell pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could easily envision encapsulating some of what Starrett does with the mobility wad, some of what they're doing with the gymnastics wad, some dedicated barbell-oriented strength work, and then some conditioning in there. And lo and behold, you have something that looks like although the Catalyst wad has changed over time and become much more just kind of O-lifting specific, but that was very similar to what you were doing when you were doing kind of a more generalist program. But then you have something that looks a lot like CrossFit football, max effort black box. You know, you're just kind of rounding out the capacities that you're developing, and you're not just simply hanging out in that like glycolytic pathway all the time. You know, it's good for leaning out, and it's fun in that kind of group beatdown kind of gig, but you just can't. You can't build legitimate programming around that day in, day out for months or years on time.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, too, that if you look at so many people who have been involved in CrossFit for a considerable period of time, you know, like a year or more, and it's a constant question and discussion on forums and whatever and blog posts, is that these people are trying to find ways to mix weightlifting, basic strength training, gymnastics, and keeping their conditioning up. In other words, like they're struggling to find ways to do what CrossFit purported to do in the first place, and has clearly failed to do, because otherwise there wouldn't be all these people trying to figure out how to do it.
Right.
And so, like, so, right. So much of the good stuff in the community has come from people like that who are experimenting with it and writing about it and then getting other people to kind of tinker with it a little bit, rather than coming from the CrossFit HQ side of things.
And I think that's unfortunate whenever you start getting the innovation isn't really happening from the top. That's just...
It's only unfortunate when the top denies that innovation from getting any exposure or credit.
Yeah, yeah. But the message could get out to more people easier.
Yeah. So
it'll trickle up.
I'm going to steer you back to the actual question real quick. So she's doing 20, 30 minute, three times a week, push-pull squat circuits, and then 20 minutes of cardio. So no, that's not really what the former CrossFit was like, although I guess in a sense it's more similar than what the current CrossFit is.
Yeah. And what she's doing, and then even that aside, like... That seems like a pretty reasonable way to slice and dice all the stuff, you know. And I think, as always, the main deal with that is just Are you making some progress and are you enjoying the training?
Yeah. And I think it is a really good kind of template to work with. You're going to consistently, you know, get exposure to all these basic movements, and you can very easily work in variety while maintaining that template. So it's easy for you to plan, and you don't have to be scratching your dome every single day you go into the gym wondering what to do. And so you can kind of train by whim to a certain extent, yet still make sure you're kind of accomplishing what you're set out to accomplish. All right.
Good question, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know what this one's going to be. Johnny Canuck says, Rob and Greg, Rob, loyal listener since day one and have enjoyed the addition of Greg since him hopping aboard. Thanks. I would love to get your guys' take on paleo living and strength training through the winter months up north. While I train at a well-programmed strength and conditioning facility, shameless plug for Spark Sport Conditioning under Kim Layton, and do my best to stay paleo/primal and get plenty of sleep, I can't help but get crazy carb cravings and almost feel lackluster efforts at the gym. I understand that the photo periods probably have much to do with this, seeing how we get 15 hours of total darkness and 9 hours of sun if we're lucky. We all can't be as fortunate to live in Cali or Reno, but don't worry, guys, I'm not ready to pull a Kurt Cobain just yet. What would you guys recommend not to treat disease or sickness vitamin D levels to be? Would going ketogenic help during the winter months? Seasonal veggies, nothing grows in these conditions. What would you guys focus on for strength gains? Seeing how most of mine come in the summer, most likely due to the amount of sunlight we get. Thanks again for all your efforts and hope you guys can help me navigate paleo living in these icy conditions comparable to Hoth as I avoid wampas and keep warm while sleeping inside my tauntaun. Oh boy.
Low everybody's tauntaun should be warm and yeah. So, you know, just as an aside, Spark Sport Conditioning is a great facility. Kim Layton runs a great program up in Edmonton. Got to do, I think, two talks up there for his folks and had a really good time. So that super cool scene. Vitamin D levels, and this is, I always forget the conversion, so you're going to have to figure out the conversion because we're doing goofy U.S. measures. But, you know, in that 50 to 65, 50 to 70 nanograms per deciliter range, I think is good. I'm starting to suspect that trying to track down some sort of I don't think it's quite a tanning bed, but some sort of a full spectrum light bed that helps you to make vitamin D naturally is a good way to go because you do get a whole bunch of other secosteroids produced in the vitamin D pathway, and those are important in testosterone production. It's important in maintaining normal hypothalamic functioning and all that. So that might be a way to go.
What about one of those old those UV things from like the 50s for when you had acne? You just like plopped yourself down in front of it and just sunburned your face till they went away.
Someone's got to. I think that sounds like a great idea. You know, it's probably right next to the old radiograph machines where people could walk in front of it and you could like see their skeleton, and they were getting the equivalent of like 50,000 chest x-rays now, like in a minute.
Yeah. They had one of those for fitting shoes too. It's just like a x-ray machine. You put your feet under there so you can get toe cancer.
Awesome. Dude, you probably had earlobe cancer. The energy coming out of that stuff was insane. So, oh man. So ketogenic diet, you know, obviously in the past I've been much in this like lights out, go ketogenic during the winter months. As we go forward and we look at some of the cortisol issues associated with training and ketosis and all the rest of that stuff, I think that might be a good option, but then again, it might not. And I would kind of have to look at the individual and kind of see how your sleep is, how your recovery is, and all that sort of jive, and then kind of figure out whether or not a ketogenic application is really going to be a smart thing. It could be a deal where maybe 2 or 3 days you go kind of low carb, or, you know, Matt Lalonde was doing a gig where he was eating carbs, so kind of a reverse cyclic low carb, where he was eating a fair amount of carbs throughout the week, and then the 2 days of the weekend, super low carb. So you're kind of compressing that hormetic kind of stress her into only 2 days. And he was doing a little bit of intermittent fasting on the weekend and stuff like that by just eating like one or two really big meals. And that was it. But I would just, you know, I would play with it and see how you do. But where one time I thought that the wintertime ketosis was just like the cat's meow, I'm just not as sure now. There might be some arguments for not doing that. Strength focus, maybe Greg can jump in more on this one. You jump in on other stuff too. But, you know, Michael Rutherford was one of the first people that mentioned the photoperiod effect on strength gains and the fact that you make the bulk of your if you were to, you know, put together all of the strength gains that you made in a given year, that they're typically when the photoperiod is the longest. Greg, any thoughts on that?
Sounds like a really smart guy, which I know he is. But yeah, I mean, I think definitely, and I know people have kind of experimented with this. I think Scott Hagness actually messed around with this a bit. Really shifting into more of a low volume training approach during the winter. So you could maintain a kind of a lower carb intake and not be harming or, you know, slowing down your gains. And so I think focusing on skill work a lot, which is not necessarily super demanding of you know, the glycolytic metabolism, but is, you know, keeps you active, keeps you mobile, really low rep, heavy strength work, which is going to be driving kind of neurological improvements much more so than actual morphological things. So again, you don't need so much construction material to recover from your workouts. And then, you know, I think doing some kind of cyclic low carb in whatever format seems to work for you is probably a great idea. I think in general, that's a really good idea. And it's,
so, you know, in that context, say like normal pre-Leptin chart kind of gig, like you might be getting, you know, it's, say like if you're kind of hypertrophy oriented, you might be getting like 25 to 50 reps in like a back squat or a bench or, you know, something like that in a given workout. What type of rep and intensity scheme are you talking about for modifying this for like the wintertime training?
Like primarily singles and doubles, maybe some triples. But I mean, even doing things where you're still getting, you know, 15 to 25 reps maybe per exercise, but doing it, you know, 8 sets of 3, 10 sets of two, that sort of thing, and building up your total volume with a larger number of sets rather than with a larger number of reps. So again, gotcha. You know, being able to use that much higher intensity and not really tap into the glycogen stuff so much.
Gotcha.
Or require, you know, so much food for recovery too.
This is somewhat off topic, but most of it is. I've been kicking around the idea because I've been reading more and more stuff on the really nasty effects that sitting has on our health. Like you almost instantly become insulin resistant. You don't mobilize or utilize fat as a fuel source, like in your trunk muscles and your leg muscles when they become inactive. About the only thing worse that you could do is just straight out bed rest. And, you know, like that one workout a day, although helpful, doesn't seem to undo this stuff to the degree that we might like to see it improved. And so there's some, you know, rattling around at the, you know, kind of like Centers of Disease Control level of making more and more recommendations for people to have punctuated activity all throughout the day. And so what I was thinking about is taking my standard workout, you know, I've been on like kind of a 4-day-a-week template, and depending on my travel and stuff like that, I might get all 4 days in 1 week, I might get 3 days in a week, you know, whatever. But basically taking that template, breaking it up into, say, like 5 to 8 bite-sized pieces, and then once an hour, once every, you know, 90 minutes, something like that. I basically, because we just moved to Reno, I've got a home gym that I'm outfitting now. It's basically like, you know, 50 steps from my office. But basically throughout the day, getting the total amount of work I would have done, but I would basically do, you know, 5 mini workouts, 8 mini workouts or something like that. And it would keep me active throughout the day. And then I would not, in lieu of that, I would not really be doing a workout hour per se, other than hopefully getting in some jujitsu or something like that. But Greg, what do you think about that? Does that sound nuts? Or I've been kicking around the idea of giving this a shot.
No, I think it's pretty cool. And, you know, it's almost reflective of the classic notion of kind of Bulgarian weightlifting training, where you'd have several training sessions a day where you're mm-hmm. doing usually only one exercise, maybe two. And then you have, you know, like half hour breaks between, and then a couple hour breaks. And so largely how that works is a cigarette break on one of them, and then a nap and eating on another one, you know, coming back. So you're having these bursts of activity, but they're spread throughout the day. So you're able to operate at much higher levels of intensity and focus while still getting this total volume of work. So I realize that's not the same thing, but it's also kind of reminiscent of speaking of Pablo Tsatsouline's, his whole grease the groove thing, where it's like you put a pull-up right. bar in your house, and every single time you walk through that doorway, you do a couple pull-ups. And so it's not like you're doing 50 pull-ups in a row, but through the course of a day, you actually build up this huge volume of pull-ups. And I remember you and I messed with stuff like that at the old NorCal gym quite a bit. Just like, well, let's just see how many times in a day we can just do, you know, knock off a quick set of pull-ups. And I think that stuff works. Absolutely. Will it have the same effects as a regular training session? Probably not, but I think it would do some interesting things.
Yeah, you know, when we were doing that stuff, I was also doing capoeira. I was also a good chunk younger at that point, which I still wonder.
Ah, to be young again. You know,
indeed, you know, how much of a factor does that have? But we were doing tons of capoeira, tons of handstand work, handstand push-ups, head of the Heinz drills, all that sort of jive. And that was the only time in my life I've had over body weight standing press. You know, I was like a buck 70, buck 75. Had a 187, 192 standing press, and I've never been able to come close to that since then.
And wasn't that around the same time you had a one-arm pull-up, too?
Yeah, I had a one-arm pull-up, had a overbody weight standing press, and we were hitting a ton of volume on all that stuff. And you know, I've never gotten back into that, and part of that is that I wasn't, you know, my coaching time in the gym really wound down to almost nothing, and then eventually nothing when we moved and I started writing and doing more stuff like that. So just the opportunity to do that stuff became really difficult. So it'll be interesting. I'm going to give that stuff a whirl and probably pick four, maybe five movements, you know, like a vertical press, horizontal press, vertical pull, horizontal pull, and then, you know, a quad and a glute centric or hamstring centric hip movement. And just kind of hammer on that stuff. Maybe do one day and one another day. And every third exposure, cut my volume in half. Again, Pavel-esque and Polikin-esque and all that jive. Just kind of see what comes of that.
Well, I think another interesting thing you're going to notice is that going into each workout, you're going to feel really good. You're going to feel warm right. and mobile. Like the times that I've trained multiple times a day, you know, my warm-up time is virtually non-existent. You know, there was a period of time where I would have like three squat sessions a day. And that very first session in the morning, I'd have to, you know, do my full warm up because I'm not a spring chicken anymore either. But those second two, I literally wouldn't have to do anything. I'd put 70 kilos on the bar and it would be like 70, 110, 130, 150, 170, 190, you know, whatever. And I felt amazing. And so the volume was extremely low. I mean, it was virtually all singles aside from the more warm-up sets in that very first squat session. But yeah, you're going to feel pretty good. I do believe.
I'll give it a whirl, and we managed to fritter away a massive amount of time on that. Okay. But it was an interesting question anyway. Well, so
the reading of this next question is going to take just as long as the answering of that previous one. So let me get started. Steph says, some background. My relationship to the paleo diet is more or less guilty by association. I follow it because I live with my boyfriend who is religious by it and swears his life by it. I cook paleo meals for myself because that's all that's in the pantry and or refrigerator. I cook paleo meals, dinner for two, because that's all he eats. For the most part, I let him cook because he likes to. And guess what we eat? paleo food. As far as my exercise, I'm the literal meaning of nomad. I walk every day about 4 miles. I go where work goes, kind of like how our ancestors followed their food. I don't have a car, so in order to get around, it's either walking or biking. I can bike 7 miles with only needing a sip of water. I'm by no means extreme when it comes to exercise. Trust me, I would get eaten. LOL. Now I've heard paleo works wonders, and I know if I only try it for 30 days, tra-la-la, spiel. Now I'm willing... yeah, Rob. Now I'm willing to be more strict with this diet if there's any consolation on one thing. One thing. The only health issue I can't tolerate is my teeth. Apparently my family has awful teeth, and the dentist's solution is always to take Advil, ibuprofen, Tylenol, etc. None of that shit works. You know that, and I know that. Just eases the pain. Maybe. Depending on how well you trick yourself into believing it helps. I'm 21, I've had one tooth extraction, one due for a root canal, and a total of 4 cavities in the past 2 years. Spent nights crying because of tooth pain, and all too often I've relied on Novocaine. That's the wrong cane. I've already took a scary dose of Vicodin as a result of these teeth, and my front tooth is turning a funny color. Top it off, I grind my teeth at night, resulting in some mean jaw pain where hearty meats and steamed vegetables are difficult to eat. Now I've stopped using fluoride products for the most part, so I typically brush my teeth with just water and then gargle mouthwash. My chomps are on a fast rate deterring decline. I'm not sure how to read that. I need to save them, and if giving up what ice cream, wheat, green beans, or whatever is the way to do it, then so be it. Luckily for me, the only dairy product I really like is ice cream and frozen yogurt. I'm sure that's lucky. Legumes were never a big deal for me, and it's been approximately a year and a half since I've cut out the majority of wheat products. I can pull my reins tighter on this diet if I know it's worth it. The results I need, I have a feeling, will take longer than 30 days. I've noticed there are hardly any podcasts that address what this diet can do or could do for teeth. Everyone's concerned with what exercise or breast milk substitute or turning loved ones to paleo. However, I was hoping there was insight on what foods I could eat to strengthen my teeth or what exercise even could assist in the care of my teeth. Marty Pants' boyfriend says I don't get enough strength and muscle work out of, which is a problem with most women. I think her boyfriend's saying she doesn't do enough strength work, which is a problem with women. That also aids in the strengthening of bone mass. Has there ever been anyone else who came to you with the same problem? If so, what worked for them? Maybe something else aside from giving up sugar, which is a given. I'm tired of the tooth pain, and I'm tired of dentist solutions. What's the paleo solution? Get it?
nice.
your advice is very much appreciated. Thank you, Steph.
Steph gets a free copy of the book for the product placement there. Awesome. I was talking to Eva Twardokens, who's a dental hygienist.
Who also got inducted into the USA Skiing Hall of Fame, so congratulations.
Indeed, yeah. For folks in the CrossFit scene, she's one of the early, really prominent gals. But before that, she was a 6-time world champion, 2-time Olympian, and now is a skiing world Hall of Famer. So congrats to Eva. But she's a really smart woman and has worked with a good dentist, has bludgeoned a number of her their patients into eating paleo, and has seen some pretty remarkable improvements in their teeth. I can tell you just like the basic maintenance stuff, flossing, brushing with something besides, something like a Sonicare is actually really good because you'll tend not to hurt the gums. I don't know if you have any gum recession going on. There's some interesting stuff in the literature that I've read that actually differences in oral bacteria can promote or prevent tooth decay. And so you might do a little bit of Google searching on that, like literally like oral bacteria tooth decay and kind of figure that stuff out. Hopefully it's not like some of the stuff they've been doing with the fecal bacterial transplantation or whatever, where they pull poo out of a healthy person and put it in an unhealthy person and the unhealthy person gets healthy. It's wacky stuff. But, obviously eating better would be good, minimizing sugar because you're going to minimize the acid production that damages the teeth. If you're grinding your teeth, which I'm a tooth grinder, I actually have a chipped tooth because of a tooth grinding and from a spinning elbow that I caught in my early kickboxing days that knocked the tooth completely out, and I managed to put it back in roll up a paper towel and bite it back into place, and the thing went back into the socket. I have photos of it.
What a badass. Awesome,
but it was pretty cool, although I should have hopefully been knocked out, but I didn't.
Like, that's because your tooth absorbed the blow.
Totally. It was like the crash test dummy. Even through my mouth guard, it did all that stuff to me. So I would get a night guard for sure. Doing some relaxation exercise before you go to bed so that you help relax your jaw. Getting a night guard so that you don't grind your teeth. That will absolutely screw them up and remove the enamel and make them more prone to damage. That's all the stuff that I could think of. We want to have Eva on the show, and so maybe if we can stick this in our brains, and I know Eva listens to the show, maybe we can revisit this, and if we missed anything, or if she's like, oh my God, you guys are idiots, don't recommend that. But that's my best understanding of all that stuff. Greg, any additional thoughts on teeth?
Maybe not on teeth specifically, but I mean, you just went through this whole thing about, oh, I need you to convince me to do it, and I need you to give me good reasons. And I mean, I guess I just see it as it's got the potential to help not only your teeth, but pretty much everything. And so why not just try it? I mean, I realize that's trite, and you're probably really sick of hearing Rob say it. I know I don't say it too much because he says it for me. But I mean, what possible harm is going to come from you trying it for 30 days or 60 days or whatever? I mean, it's certainly not going to hurt your teeth to not be eating dairy and sugar, especially when you say your only kind of dairy that you like is ice cream. That's definitely not helping anything.
Dude, and if you want a motivator for why it's worthwhile, there's a new show on Discovery Channel called Big Shrimpin'.
What?
it's kind of like Deadliest Catch, only it's in like the Louisiana Bayou, and you're seeing all these dudes going out on shrimp boats. And there's maybe three teeth among like six or eight dudes out on these boats. Nice. And so if you want a good motivator for taking care of your grill, tune into that show. It's pretty boring other than the fact that these guys theoretically speak English, but every single word that any of them say is English subtitled.
Nice.
And part of it's the accent, and part of it is they have no teeth. So that might be a good motivator for you.
Yes. Do it for your relationship. Your boyfriend loves paleo, so you guys can love paleo together.
And keep your teeth.
Yes, that will also help him love you. Right. Henry says...
Do we have one more in us?
Oh, at least. I'm good to go. Cool. Henry says, so where are you guys on 5-hour energy drinks? I'm a professional fireman and trainer coach on my days off. Been strict paleo for the last 4 months or so after starting with the Whole 30 challenge. Great experience. See, Steph, there you go. Great experience. I used to frequent these little delicious cocktails after a long night or during the day at the firehouse pre-Whole 30 challenge. Let me clarify, when I say frequent, I mean I may have had four a week and never more than one a day. Oh, that's baby stuff. Yeah. Ever since going on the paleo route, they have gone by the wayside, and initially my energy levels were just fine. Now 4 months into this, I'm starting to feel the need for a slight kick, if you will, every once in a while. I understand the healthiest option is more sleep, take a nap, I know, but on days we get lots of calls, this is quite tough. I can't stand coffee, and I've tried to throw down an espresso or two, and those things are the single most vile liquid I've ever thrown down my gullet. So after trying to up my fat intake in the AM and really throughout the day and getting very little boost, I found myself wandering towards the 5 hours in the drugstore and rationalizing that they can't really be that bad. I mean, hell, everyone else gets their coffee. How come I can't have one of these? Although I've held off for now. What is your opinion on these things? They claim zero sugar and some caffeine and, of course, tons of vitamin B in there as well, but are they truly dirty water and should be avoided at all costs? If this is indeed the case, what is my best option for a perk every now and again? Gracias, gentlemen.
Oh, man. The deal with the 5-hour energies, similar to just like the multivitamin, like the big dose B vitamin gig. I was talking to Lauren Cordain about this stuff, and he is of the opinion that a number of B vitamins, particularly like B12, works as a methylating agent. Methylating agents can methylate DNA, which means that it can either turn DNA on or off, which can either make it a growth promoter or growth inhibitor, And you want that stuff to happen the way that you want it to happen. You don't want it to kind of slide out and have kind of wacky stuff going on. And Lauren is of the opinion that since they started enriching foods with like folic acid and B vitamins, and there was a good reason for this. People were B vitamin deficient. They were folic acid deficient. And this was potentially developing neural tube defects. The problem with this is that the amounts that have been put in there and the type of stuff, like in the example of folic acid, we usually get folate, which is actually kind of an ambiguous term in chemistry. It should be a very specific item, but in fact, in nutritional biochemistry, we're talking about a number of different similar molecules in this situation. But we should get this substance called folate. That's what you would get out of like green leafy vegetables and whatnot. What we end up with is folic acid. Folic acid has to go through the liver before getting converted into a folate. And in the meantime, it is a potent methylating agent throughout the rest of the body. And this can be really, really problematic for things like breast, colon, and prostate cancer. And in talking to Lauren Cordain, he's of the opinion that high-dose B vitamins can increase in the likelihood of these endothelial-derived cancers, breast, colon, prostate, astrocyte, brain tumors, glioblastomas. It starts looking really, really similar, actually, to elevated insulin levels. So my main axe to grind with this stuff is that, you know, the amounts of the B vitamins are really, really high. That's part of the reason why you get a pop from it. But it is way beyond physiological levels, supraphysiological levels. The interesting thing that we've seen out of epidemiological studies with B vitamins and vitamin supplementation in general, very few people have overt deficiency diseases. You know, like in sub-Saharan Africa, you have people who are vitamin A deficient and they're going blind. And if you give them vitamin A, it prevents blindness. You know, that's a legitimate application. For most westernized peoples who are taking multivitamins, we don't see any epidemiological proof that it improves health or longevity, and we appear to see instances in which it is damaging and potentially disease-promoting. So that's my reticence in recommending something like a 5-hour energy or something like that. Like, it sounds kind of goofy, but maybe the whack of green tea, maybe the chomping on nicotine gum, some other stimulant might be the way to go in this situation, because quite literally the pharmacology is more benign than taking B vitamins. Thoughts, Greg?
I was just going to say, don't take them too much. Yeah. Your answer was a bit more comprehensive.
So, you know, and I guess the long and short of it is, one a day too much? I don't know. Probably not, but I just honestly don't know. But, you know, the fact that you are in this a line of work where being alert and being on your game is really important, then that may play into some of the cost-benefit deal where you're like, well, I literally can't stand coffee. There aren't any other caffeine sources that I like. I'm going to do a 5-hour energy 3 or 4 times a week. And at the end of the day, I really don't think that that's going to be a big deal, but I just don't know for sure.
Yeah. I have a really hard time believing that a couple of those things a week is going to cause more of a problem than any number of other things I guarantee you're being exposed to in your life. So I do think there's definitely a cost benefit thing there.
And you know, here's a thought that just occurred to me. That it's a really good point that you bring up. How many of the people that are taking multivitamins are taking the multivitamins on top of high fructose corn syrup, a high carbohydrate intake, and lack of sleep and lack of vitamin D? You know, and so you start looking at kind of multivariate elements of this. And so, as always, if you're just generally eating well, you're going to buy yourself some protection from all kinds of nasty stuff. So I don't know, maybe that would buy you a little more window of opportunity in this whole thing. So, given the frequency that you're taking that in, it's probably pretty safe. And then the fact that you're eating well, that would probably mitigate problems as well. Greg's voice of reason is winning out, which is just damn peculiar. So
it's pretty odd. All right. I like this next question a lot. And I just want to say, like, for those of you who's for whom English is not your first language, you don't need to apologize for not being fluent. You guys are way better at English than I am at whatever your first language is. So have at it.
But the title is awesome.
Yes, the title is Our Strength Equals Muscle.
And that's not it. That's not it. As it, that's it. It. R as in is it, not as in like ours.
Yeah. Yeah, ours does not. All right. Pedro says, hi there, geeks. I'm about to make a quick question, mostly because I am not fluent in English at all. I've been struggling so much to connect the too many standpoints about training and physical regarding that I just gave up. One says that higher volume is better for offering muscle cells a kind of nutrient bath, blah, blah, blah. Other says that high volume don't do shit. Rep ranges for this, rep ranges for that, and stuff like, just do as many as you can, drop it, and do it again and again. Ain't dead yet, so do it again, mother fudger. Oh God, I just want to get big. And when I read that we should seek for lower volume in order to prevent the transformation of fast muscle fiber into slower ones, I was like, that's enough. I'm going to ask Rob and Greg. So, considering I am getting stronger, am I actually getting bigger? There is such a thing as optimal rep ranges for muscle growth. I know there is too many factors to consider, but at this time I just want a simplistic baseline to go for and fine-tune from there. You can make yourself comfortable and do the blah, blah, blah geek stuff. Just let me know when you hit the do this shit part. Oh, man. This guy's the best.
Definitely. What was his name again?
Pedro. Yeah, I read it as Pedro. There was an extra E in there, so forgive me if that really was your name, and I'm just assuming that it's something else.
Oh, man. I actually have tears coming down my cheeks. That was just hilarious.
I seriously would love to write a full-length training book in this fashion.
In this style? Just use this as a...
And the last chapter would be called Do This Shit Part.
This is the part where you do shit.
Oh, man. Okay, so let's see. Okay. Let's see if we can sift through this here and make it a practical answer.
So optimum rep ranges, when you dig around, like if you're doing any type of an overload scenario and calories are sufficient and anabolic environment is sufficient, people will tend to get bigger, like even on onesies, twosies, and threesies. Seems like more the 6 to 12 rep range is definitely more, you know, it's heavy enough that you can get some myofibril stimulus, but you get that sarcoplasmic increase in muscle. Also, the dudes that are real, real big seem to be real, real anabolic and hit a variety of rep ranges. I mean, is that too simplistic?
No, I was going to make it even more simplistic by saying have a foundation of low rep, very heavy strength work that hits all your major movements, i.e. squat, pull, push, upper body pull, and then have a bunch of supplementary work that is higher rep ranges and build up a ton of volume with it.
So how could you structure that? Like, could you do 4 to 6 weeks of kind of a neuro-based, real heavy intensity program, you know, where you're like 80 to 95% of your one rep max doing 8x3, 10x2, 12x1 kind of, or 12x2 type stuff. And then you transition into, say, like a 3 or 4 week volume kind of gig where it's like 4 sets of 10, that sort of deal. Like, would you block periodize it, or how would you slide that?
Maybe. I mean, you know what? That what you just said is basically the mass gain program that we came up with a million years ago in like performance menu issue 3 or whatever it was.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's definitely one way to do it. But even just as a... without periodizing it that specifically, having, you know, let's just say for simplicity's sake, you're training 3 days a week. So day one would be like your squat day. So, you know, maybe heavy back squats, you know, 3 to 5 reps, get in 20 to 30 reps in there. You know, again, weight is your focus. And then doing a bunch of assistance. So even doing lighter squats for a bunch of reps, you know, 10 to 12 reps for a few sets, and then your glute ham raises and, you know, stiff leg deadlifts, you know, whatever the case is, to build up a bunch of volume after that. And then, you know, your upper body stuff, having a main strength focus, you know, like bench press or overhead press or even push press or something like that. And then going in and layering on a bunch of volume stuff. So throw in some incline dumbbell bench, some dips, you know, whatever it is. And again, just doing like tons of volume. I mean, it's amazing how much volume you can get with that stuff when you're not pushing huge amounts of weight, you know, 5 to 6 sets of 8 to 15 sort of thing. And obviously that's super simplistic and it's only 3 days a week, but a lot of times that actually works well for people.
Cool. I know for myself, like I have kind of shifted out of the 1 to 3 rep range and have been more in the 6 to 12 kind of rep range for a while. And I'm definitely getting bigger from it. Like I had spent years in that very low rep range kind of gig, other than like doing a CrossFit type workout where you're doing it in a metabolic environment. But I mean, it looks like just kind of classic bodybuilding type stuff, other than I'm not really doing a bunch of curls and skull crushers per se, but it's more just like squat, dip, press, but, you know, 4 to 6 sets, rep range more 8 to 12, 8 to 15, and usually working up to one heavy set within that, but the heavy would be relative. It's still around like eight repetitions for the top end, you know, relative to like being like 3 repetitions or something.
And then just real quick to address that question right there in the middle, considering I'm getting stronger, am I actually getting bigger? The answer is not necessarily. I mean, you can develop a lot of strength without having any kind of structural change to the muscle at all. And there's a lot of neurological improvements that can occur. Now, if you're relatively new, it's pretty hard to get stronger without getting bigger. And then eventually that's going to kind of taper off for you. Is that simplistic enough?
Yeah, it works for me. I like it. I think that was the douche part. So.
Oh, here we go. John says, "Dear Rob, I'm a chiropractor, former bodybuilder, and a huge paleo promoter, and have found it personally helpful and extremely valuable clinically. I'm a big follower of everything nutrition and strength related, and one theme keeps popping up. What's the deal with whole food supplements versus synthetic / high dose supplements? For example, Polykin products are all high doses and usually only a couple of vitamins / herbs per product, example, magnesium, similar to the Metagenics product approach. Whereas Check promotes whole food, quote, complexes of vitamins similar to the standard process product approach. The whole food supplement approach claims that not as much of a nutrient is needed because of complexes and the body uses them more efficiently. They further go on to state that any dose of a single vitamin would throw biochemicals out of whack. So my question is as follows. 1. If there is an established effective dose for a vitamin, say 5,000 IU for vitamin D, doesn't that translate into taking 5,000 IU of D no matter the source of the vitamin? 2. I understand that some vitamins work synergistically with each other in a complex, but it can also go the same way and they can inhibit / compete with each other. Does this negate the vitamin complexes claim? 3. If whole foods are the best source of complex vitamins, why the hell do they derive most of them from wheat and grain products?
Good stuff. So like the established effective dose, I'm trying to figure out how to answer this thing concisely. One interesting thing, say like a new chapter has some, you know, food derived, basically they grow yeast and they feed yeast nutrients, and then the yeast bring the nutrients into their cell membranes and into their cells they'll freeze dry the yeast, and then you get this, complexed B vitamins and whatnot. The interesting thing, though, is that they feed the yeast synthetic vitamins. So, at the end of the day, the chemistry is the same. It's the same deal. Every once in a while, I always love it when we're cruising through Costco in particular, and whether it's like a shampoo or it's a food product or whatever, and it's like, no chemicals. And, what they're trying to say is no synthetic chemicals, I assume, but it's kind of like, Dude, it's either matter or energy, and if it's matter, it's chemicals. So let's get that squared away. But, you know, for me, the issue here is way more about total magnitude of vitamins that you're going to get relative to what you would see in whole foods. And then definitely also the ratios of what you would see, say, like, what does riboflavin usually occur? What amount does it occur in relative to B12 and relative to B3 and all that sort of stuff? So that is an important element. And this is some stuff that Lauren Cordain has been working on, where they've been basically creating what is essentially like a 3D map of, you know, not only the amounts, but also the ratios, kind of like a mountainous terrain of one nutrient relative to other nutrients. And there's a kind of population distributions where, you know, within one standard deviation, you see the vast majority of most foods containing these amounts and ratios. And then within two standard deviations, you don't really see anything outside of that. Whereas the way that most of the synthetic vitamins or the high-dose vitamins, they're occurring in things that you simply do not see occurring in nature, both amounts and ratios. So, and like we talked about just a little bit earlier, I do think that that's a concerning feature. But so that's where, like, if you're going to use some sort of a supplement, I would lean towards something that's more like a food-grade supplement, because it will tend to have lower doses. Standard Process has some good stuff. New Chapter has some good stuff. But I think those things are probably better in general, except for things like vitamin D, which you need a big whack of vitamin D, because we're usually either getting that from, like, liver, or we're getting it from sunlight, in which case, we're, you know, from sunlight, we're getting 20,000 IUs of vitamin D from, like, a 10 to 20 minute noon exposure if you're anywhere, like, south of, like, the 35th parallel and it's a sunny day. So, you know, there are certain things that we get large doses of nutrients out of that. The place that I think that the food-derived nutrient producers kind of jump the shark is that they throw some spurious stuff out there, like your body can't recognize synthetic vitamins and stuff like that. And that's just crap. That is not true at all. Your body recognizes it just fine. The issues are really more magnitude and ratios of these things, not whether or not it's synthetic. The chemistry is the same.
Huh. I learned something today. Oh, boy.
Well, that's good.
All right. Well, this time we kept it under an hour, even though we did manage to go off the rails a couple times.
Are we under an hour? Oh, cool.
Ooh. Of course, it wouldn't be the Paleo Solution podcast if we stayed on topic the whole time. It just wouldn't be the same.
That is true. We seem to be answering fewer and fewer questions and doing more and more diversionary activity.
Yes. Well, we're just being more thorough. That's all it is.
Okay. I'll buy that.
Right. Any last words your fans?
Can't thank you too much. We're finally situated in Reno and all that jive. Doing a gig for the military this weekend. Should be back. We've got the NorCal holiday party on, like, December 15th, I think. Going to be down in Chico. We've got a couple of new hires from our national call for strength coaches. And we had one guy, Justin Scott, who just started up at NorCal, is a very promising young man. And then we have another guy who's coming out and doing his initial interviews that week. So he'll be there both for interview and holiday party, which those things are epic. Cool.
That'll be fun.
Indeed. Are you guys going to make it?
When is it?
I think the 15th, whatever that Friday
of
is.
December? We will not make it.
Okay. Fine.
The last time we came to a party in NorCal, poof. Man.
I don't know if everybody found all their clothes.
It was pretty wild.
We drank 8 gallons of tequila. This was our 5 years in business deal, so it was a pretty big gig. We had 8 gallons of tequila that we made into NorCal margaritas.
There was plenty just still in the bottles, as I recall.
Oh, dude. No, everything was gone. Like, I was given two big bottles of tequila. No, I mean
tequila that was not watered down by your margarita.
No. That's right, because Jared brought that one, and you guys, like, destroyed that thing. But we had 8 gallons of tequila. We had 48 bottles of wine, like, 6 cases of gluten-free beer, and it was all gone. We had the place catered by Smoke and Moe's, and the rib discard pile. By the end of the night, people were going over and eating out of the discarded rib pile because they were so hammered. And I was like, guys, those are discarded ribs. People have already eaten them. And they'd look at me and just kind of shrug. It was like a scene out of The Walking Dead where they were just like, I don't really care.
I remember having to make a beer run with Steve at some point in the night, mm-hmm. even though you had an epic stock there. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah, CrossFitters drink a lot of booze, so that was a pretty big win. Yeah. So I don't think it'll be that big, but I think next year it'll be our 10 year. So we will have to pull out all the stops for that, nitrous tanks and all kinds of good stuff.
Good. I might have to make that one then.
Craig's like, okay, I will show up for that one.
All right, cool,
sweet. All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you soon.
Enjoy Reno.
Later, dude.